Welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we have one of my friends. I'm really glad she stopped by the show. Not only is she brilliant, and although we're on different sides of the aisle, sometimes we actually find ourselves to be thinking more alike these days because the world is going fucking insane. And she's also so fashionable, but none other than the Essie Cup. What's happening? How are you?
What an intro. Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here with you. First of all, what's going on? How's life? How's the new year treating you?
Life is fine. Any hopes that 2023 would normalize after a few insane years? Out the window. Gone. Out the window. Just yeah, buckle up.
We're going to get to some of that insanity real quick, but we start each one of our shows by having our guest walk us through the arc of their career. And you've been a commentator for some time, but help listeners understand how you got to where you are. What was your first job in politics and in media? And walk us from that role to what you're doing now.
Well, when I went to college, was an art history major, super useful, I'm sitting on a pile of art history money. No, but it didn't matter because what I did in college was I worked at the college newspaper, and that's where I decided, you know, I was going to be a writer for my life. That was where I really got my degree. And so when I left college, I went after writing jobs and I got a few, and I ended up settling in at the New York Times, where I was for 8 years. During that time, I wrote a book on the side about politics, and really only because 9/11 had happened in my backyard. I really hadn't planned on writing about politics at all. And when Simon & Schuster published that, they put us on TV to promote it. And so I did Morning Joe, I think was my first hit. And then, you know, the calls kept coming in, man. Like, you know, I was unsigned. So CNN would call and Fox would call, and I could go anywhere. So I did, because it promoted the writing, and all I wanted was more writing jobs. And I got those, and I wrote another book, and I got a column that I've had now for more than a decade at the New York Daily News. But the TV kind of just became a permanent foundation under which I would do all this other stuff. And as for politics, I came up, like I said, really post 9/11 in center-right politics, back when things like national security and fiscal responsibility and austerity, that's what appealed to me. And those are all the things that have been jettisoned now in favor of crappy culture wars. So, you know, I don't even recognize today's party, and it's certainly not what drew me into movement politics. But you know, I was like a regular at CPAC in my 20s. I was like a Buckley nerd, you know, I mean, totally different than what's animating the party now. So that's the long and short of it.
I want to hop right in because you've been kind of vocal, I guess, recently about some of the issues going on. But I this isn't even really on my outline to discuss with you today, but I got to talk about it. Tell me about how someone like Santos gets elected in either party. I mean, how does this fundamentally, the people want to know? I mean, it's very difficult to commit this level of fraud and find yourself as one of the 535 most important politicos in the country. Is it not?
Yes and no. I mean, you'd think it'd be hard to do that and become president, and yet someone did.
Yeah. Facts.
Lying about his biography, his resume, exaggerating, inventing. I mean, this was sort of a Trump blueprint. I think George Santos has taken it to sociopathic kind of levels. I mean, almost comical if it weren't so like dangerous having someone like that with any amount of power in Congress. But I think George Santos is a uniquely absurd kind of figure. But how we get here is people, particularly in my party, started prioritizing other things. You know, once you elected Trump, and this is why people like me in 2015 were like, do not go down this road, this will be bad. But once you decided Trump was okay, then you had to decide that lying was okay, like habitually, that morality didn't really matter anymore, character didn't matter, integrity. the party made that bargain. Mm-hmm. And they lied to themselves and said, well, we don't like that stuff. We're here for the other stuff. But it wasn't, Trump wasn't a cafeteria where you could just pick and choose what you wanted. You got all of him and you owned all of him. And so for my party, this is not just how George Santos got elected. It's how Trump got elected. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, Herschel Walker nearly got elected. When you turn off the thing that says, well, our leaders should be smart, they should be honest, they should have integrity, they should have some kind of moral compass, even if they fail at it sometimes. Once you turn that off, anything goes, man. Anything goes. Because the only thing you care about is putting a seat, a butt in the seat. And the butt can be any asshole, like literally. And it was.
So is there any chance that this party sees 2023 and 2024 as an opportunity to break away from Trump and make the most of it? Can you break the Trump
seat? Why would they? It's not just, and I, you know, I have to talk about this all the time, right? It's the central question confronting the Republican Party. I don't know why they would, other than like the reasons you and I would say, because Trump is a loser and he keeps losing things for the party. That's the obvious practical reason you would. This is not a practical party. And Trumpism is still very much alive. So it's not just, do we dump Trump? Then you have to dump his voters and be willing to say, we want to be a party that says no to white nationalists, to anti-Semites, to racists, to bigots, to sexists. We want to say no to all of that. Conspiracy theorists, QAnon, you're not welcome in this party. And that's what they've not done. They've said, we'll take any voters, no matter what they look like and what they sound like. And that, you know, no surprise, you get candidates like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz and the rest of them, and you're going to get more voters like that. And instead of saying this is corrosive for the party and it's going to shrink the party, they've said, well, it'll shrink, but it'll condense. And we want the purest voters and the purest candidates, and we want them all to talk and look the same. Even if it means kicking other good conservatives like Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney out, like even at the expense of having
am I seeing this right? It wasn't their conservative bona fides, but it was just their sin was saying that we're going to extricate ourselves from Donald Trump. Is that their only sin?
It was their only sin. They vote, both of those people in particular voted very conservatively, especially Liz Cheney. Their sin was wanting to hold Trump accountable, not even extricate him from the party, just hold him accountable while he was president. And that was the ultimate sin, because policies and principles don't matter anymore to this party. That's it. It's the loyalty. And so they seem to be double and tripling down on Trumpism. They have to say no to the voters. And they know they can't do that if they ever want to win an election again. I think people like Kinzinger and Cheney said, I'm going to sacrifice my reelection to do the right thing. And, you know, the party as a whole doesn't want to do that.
I mean, you're starting to see, and I'm not, maybe you can help me dissect this, not starting to see, but you're seeing a continuation of, but you see things like book bans.
Yeah.
You saw the AP Black History in Florida. You've seen banning TikTok from government phones and things of that sort are on government devices. This seems to be where Republicans are in terms of policy initiatives. Why is that? I mean, the reason that you joined the Republican Party does not seem to be the focus of the Republican Party today. Am I missing the point, or does that make sense?
No, you're completely on the point. And, you know, a person that is drawn to this party because of book bans, banning certain classes, banning information, banning access to information, access to voting in some cases, banning abortion and reproductive rights. I say that as someone who's pro-life. The person that's attracted to that is not really attracted to like political principles.
Correct.
They're attracted to the punitive nature of this party. And look, that's a lot of folks. I'm alarmed by how many young people are lining up behind like the Charlie Kirks and the Matt Gaetzes and that sort of nationalist wing of the party because they think it's cool and they don't like wokeism, you know, quote unquote wokeism. And they think that's where like the energy is. That's really alarming. And then if you're someone like me who wants some common sense fiscal austerity in government, I like small government. I don't like it when it's huge and sweeping and out of control. You want a strong national defense. You want free trade. Where do I go? Because I, you know, no offense, I don't go to the left either, but I definitely don't go to the right. I'm not in a minority. Most people on issues like abortion and guns and immigration are pretty much in the middle, and we are homeless. We are completely without representation right now.
So what's your take on the McCarthy leadership elections and what should Americans expect out of a McCarthy speakership? Because personally, I don't expect much, but I want to hear your thoughts on it. And you, do you know Kevin?
I know, Kevin, I came up with the young guns. you don't expect much. I don't expect it to last for long. Like, I just don't expect, I don't expect it him to
like
last.
Sounds like an awful date. That's what this sounds like.
Yeah. Macari. Macari, we're parents. When someone asked me a while ago, like, do you think McCarthy will get elected speaker? I said, yeah, but not for long. Because I know these people. I know this, you know, Republican House. And he sank himself with that concession to allow like one idiot to stand up and say, he's got to go. Motion to vacate. So I just don't think he'll have a lot of power. In fact, I think he'll be one of the most inconsequential speakers we've had in modern history.
I mean, would anybody ever imagine when you look at those young guns, it was Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy. Wasn't there one more?
No, it was those three.
Those three?
Yep.
Two are just completely done with politics. One of his own making. Paul just kind of said, I'm tired. And then Kevin McCarthy is the weakest of the weak.
And has always been. I mean, Kevin was always more sort of craven in his ambition. I think Paul, who I know, really cared about policy and was really alarmed when people around him stopped caring about policy because he was very much a policy wonk. And listen, Cantor was he was like a logistics guy, you know, he much more facts and figures.
It's and like he cared about policy, but didn't necessarily like the campaigning or the politics. Like he didn't like the process.
Right. I think that's right. And so when, you know, things got a little gross, he was like, I'm gone. I'm going to the private sector. I'm going to work for some finance guys. It's so much has changed. And I think a very short period of time, it's been incredibly disorienting, you know, to really see a party you thought you knew really well. I mean, I worked on the 2012 autopsy and the things we were working on then, it's laughable to talk about now because the party's interests have changed so much.
Let's talk about the Republican presidential nomination. Trump has announced, but his campaign is leaving a lot to be desired.
What campaign?
Yeah, no. Is that because it's early or because there's actually no campaign? I mean, explain your autopsy or your view of this Trump candidacy so far.
Well, listen, I think he wants attention.
Oh, you think?
Right. I think first and foremost, it's attention. And, you know, coinciding with the Mar-a-Lago documents raid, like he can effectively position himself as a victim again to his fans. Right. He's a victim of the deep state and a thing he created. Right. For like moments like this one. I just think that feels too good for him to deny himself. But I mean, also, I think he's using a potential presidency and certainly the campaign as a shield to protect him from some investigations. Cause if he's running, then he knows DOJ and other entities won't want to look too political. So there's some of that going on. And listen, he wouldn't be crazy to think he could still, you know, win the nomination. So,
I mean, I think he wins the nomination. I mean, I think that if 15 people run for nomination and you all have not changed your Republican Party primary process because it's winner takes all. And so I think that if 15 people run and he still has a quarter of the base, doesn't that math mean he's the
nominee? That's it. Quarter of the base is all he needs. Right?
Exactly. How does a indictment, whether or not it's for classified documents or down in Georgia, how do Republican voters respond to a Trump indictment? Does that make him more or less attractive? And I honestly don't know what Republican voters are going to make of him.
I don't think they care. I don't think they would care. Because the party no longer has a wing that cares about that kind of stuff or is embarrassed by that, you know, ashamed of that, alarmed by it even. So I don't think they care in a very similar way. And this is not equating. It just reminds me, like, because we're talking about Biden's documents issue too now in the news, and they're very different. But I also don't think Democrats care that much. Republicans do, and they're going to make a big deal about it. And listen, we need to find out what happened there and why there are so many documents.
You know, I will go back. One of my only questions about those documents, because I think that they're vastly different situations. But
yeah,
how does a member of the United States Senate walk out with classified documents? That's a question, because don't they usually look at them in the skiff?
In a skiff. I mean, we had Adam Kinzinger on recently talking about just how, like, seriously, people are watching you in these skiffs to make sure you're not like taking notes, let alone taking documents.
Attorney's statement was weird because I'm not sure if he was saying that the classified documents were from that time or some of the notes that they took were from that time. So it was unclear.
I think the bottom line in all of this is we voters should find out more about the process of being able to take classified documents out and maybe buttoning that down a bit. But my only point is Trump voters don't care about indictments or anything like that. And I don't think Democrats are all that worried that like Joe Biden is somehow a terrible person for ending up with these documents. I don't think they're like questioning whether or not he should run. But I mean, you might disagree on your side of the street.
I am somebody who says that Joe Biden has every right to run. And if I had a record as such as him, I probably would be running. However, my dad was 70 years old, 72, and they told him he was too old to be, the doctor said you were too old to be a college president of 800 students. Whew. So it's kind of tough for me to say that somebody's going to actually take on a campaign at what, 83 years old, 84 years old? That just
seems and this isn't probably why you had me on to talk about it, but I'm taking advantage of having you in front of me because you're so smart on this. Like, this is what I don't understand. There's that part, the age, but also I feel like Biden was elected to be a transitional president, not a transformational one. And that's okay. Like, Democrats don't need to be embarrassed by the fact that they might be ready to move on from him. He did the job. So what, I mean, do you think that they should start looking at other folks, or is it just that there are no other folks?
No, I think there are a lot, but I mean, campaigns usually tell you who's more suited. I mean, I like the presidential campaign factor. I think that if it's Trump versus Biden, Biden wins again. But I think if it's Biden versus new, then new wins, whoever that new is, which brings me to my next question for you, because I am sitting here and you see my picture of the South Carolina State House behind me and I sat beside her. We saw a soft launch of Nikki Haley's presidential campaign last week. The former governor of my great state, state house member and ambassador to the UN. I told everybody who would listen a while ago, I think her political skills are second to none. She's awesome when it comes to that, which also means she doesn't necessarily believe in anything sometimes. But what do you think? Is she a challenger to Trump or is this just blowhard?
Anyone, I'd say this of anyone. And I agree, Nikki Haley's very talented. And I liked her a lot. But I would say this of anyone, you have got to be prepared to take Trump on in ways I don't know that any of them are prepared to, because they're too afraid of, not of him, but of losing his voters. And you have to do it in a way that also, I mean, it's such a trick. And obviously 17 other Republicans couldn't do it in 2016. And, you know, Trump is still leading the polls. He's beating like DeSantis, Pence, everyone else combined.
But you know, because you just walked into my next question. But where does Pence fit in all of this? I mean, nowhere. It's like, nowhere. I love it. I call it like the group of Mikes because it's like Mike Rogers, Mike Pence,
Pompeo.
I think what it, together they get 6% of the vote.
Together they make maybe half of a Mike that could actually compete. But no, Mike Pence has no road to victory here because he's got no natural constituents. You know, the folks that Mike Pence would need to win, well, we already know how they feel about him. They yelled it on January 6th. They wanted to hang him.
Yes.
And then the other folks like me, well, we're disappointed that he carried Trump's water for 6 years now. So there's no one left for Mike Pence to get, in my opinion. So I don't think he has much of a victory path either. But listen, it's hard to imagine anyone being able to get voters in the numbers that Trump already has them. I just can't see it.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
One of my final substantive questions, I'll get to the most important questions coming up, but final kind of substantive questions is, where do you see Democrats going wrong? And by that, I mean, it's pretty clear to me that extremism will be the name of the game for Republicans for some time. And sometimes I think on the left, we do see extremism even running amok on our side. But what do you think, or where do you think the sweet spot is? And if you had advice for national Democrats, what would it be?
I think Democrats can underplay issues that really are affecting a lot of people. And Republicans go cartoonishly to the overreach on these issues, but like immigration, crime, and the economy are really important issues to a lot of people. And I hear sometimes an unwillingness to really confront just how serious, big, important those issues are and how broken those issues are. And maybe Democrats have some role in wanting to change that or improve that. And I just think that's a huge mistake. And you don't have to accept all the Republican bullshit, mm-hmm. And the conspiracy theories and the baiting to just acknowledge, yeah, the economy is not great. And Joe Biden during the midterm saying we're stronger than ever does not help you, does not resonate with a lot of people. People saying like that Republicans invented crime as an issue in New York City. I work there every day. It's not an invention. It's real. And people feel it. And so there's just, I don't think it's a huge thing. It's like a tweak for Democrats to not be so dismissive of some issues that might fall on their doorsteps a little more than Republican doorsteps. It goes a long way to acknowledge them and then say, here's what we're going to do about them. But I really think that's the main thing I saw, especially in the midterms. And I saw it a bunch, you know, in 2020 as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you working on now? I know you're on CNN all the time. What other projects do you have?
Oh, I'm working on another book. And you know, trying to keep my sanity in an age where, I mean, I'm joking, but also not.
When did your book come out? Or have you gotten that far yet?
Yeah, that's TBD. But, you know, with the state of the world politically and socially, culturally, I think it's hard for a lot of people to like put the brakes on all the anxiety that comes out of all of this stuff. And watching the news can be really hard sometimes because it's a lot and it doesn't feel like there are a lot of solutions looming on the horizon. Like, how is this going to be solved? This keeps me up at night. So, you know, really just trying to put it all in perspective and like,
we have kids, Essie, we got to solve this shit before we turn it over to them, right?
Well, exactly. Or at least raise them to want to invest in policy and politics.
Yeah.
And not just abandon it because it's so garbage.
How can people follow you and keep up with everything that is Essie?
Well, I'm Essie Cup on Twitter for now. SCCup on Instagram. I'm on CNN all the time. And then I've got a nationally syndicated column every week. So you can look it up and I'll tell you what I'm thinking every single week.
Tell us how you feel. SCCup, I love you very much. Thank you for being a good friend of me and a friend of the show. Kiss your amazing husband and that beautiful, beautiful boy you have. I hope all is well.
Thanks for having me, Bakari. Great to see you.